Prabhupada ki, Shri Bhakti Vedanta ki, Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Giriraj Maharaj ki, Janitai Gofreman. Okay, so what did we discuss last night in our Bhakti Vedanta course? The importance of Brahmachari Ashram. Yeah. How to be Brahmachari. Yeah. Brahmachari and Brahmacharini. So far, we've heard in the 11th chapter that for one who is practicing Mishra Bhakti or mixed devotional service, he must also practice Varnashram Dham simultaneously. So it describes the qualities of a human being that everyone needs in order to begin to practice Varnashram Dharma. And then it describes in chapter 11, the various occupations of the various Varnas, in brief. And then it describes the duties of women in the Varnashram Vedic culture. And now, then it describes Varnasankara, those are outside the Vedic Dharmic context. And then in chapter 12 last night we heard about the Brahmachari Ashram or ashrams in Krishna. So the 12th chapter is explaining different ashrams. So tonight we'll finish the chapter, go from verses 11 to 31, and we'll hear about Grihastha Ashram, a little bit about Vanaprastha, or actually mostly about Vanaprastha Ashram, a little bit about sannyas. So last night we had instructions about Brahmachari Ashram, Brahmacharini Ashram also. Tonight it is mainly Vanaprastha, like that. But the other ashrams are also discussed a little. Okay. So we'll go from verses 11 to 31. All the rules and regulations apply equally to the householder and the sannyasi, the member of the renounced order of life. The grihastha, however, is given permission by the spiritual master to indulge in sex during the period favorable for procreation.
It is sometimes misunderstood that grihastha, the householder, is permitted to indulge in sex at any time. This is a wrong conception of grihastha life. In spiritual life, whether one is a grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, or brahmachari, everyone is under the control of the spiritual master. For brahmacharis and sannyasis, there are strong restrictions on sexual indulgence. Similarly, there are strong restrictions for grihasthas. Grihasthas should indulge in sex life only in accordance with the order of the Guru. Therefore, it is mentioned here that one must follow the orders of the spiritual master, Guru Vrittir Vikalpina. When the spiritual master orders, the grihastha may accept sex life. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7.11. Dharma virudho bhuteshu kamo smi. Indulgence in sex life without disobedience to the religious rules and regulations constitutes a religious principle. The grihastha is allowed to indulge in sex life during the period favorable for procreation and in accordance with the spiritual master's order. If the spiritual master's orders allow a grihastha to engage in sex life at a particular time, then the grihastha may do so. Otherwise, if the spiritual master orders against it, the grihastha should abstain. The grihastha must obtain permission from the spiritual master to observe the ritualistic ceremony of Garbhadhana Samskara. Then he may approach his wife to beget children, otherwise not. A brahmana generally remains a brahmachari throughout his entire life, but although some brahmanas become grihasthas and indulge in sex life, they do so under the complete control of the spiritual master. The kshatriya is allowed to marry more than one wife, but this also must be in accordance with the instructions of the spiritual master. It is not that because one is a grihastha, he may marry as many times as he likes and indulge in sex life as he likes. This is not spiritual life. In spiritual life, one must conduct one's whole life under the guidance of the Guru. Only one who executes his spiritual life under the direction of the spiritual master can achieve the mercy of Krishna. Yasha Prasada, Bhagavat Prasada. If one desires to advance in spiritual life but reacts whimsically, not following the orders of the spiritual master, he has no shelter. Yasha Prasada Nagati Kutoti. Without the spiritual master's order, even the Grihastha should not indulge in sex life.
So what are the points of interest in the opening paragraph?
We should always be in the guidance of the spiritual master. Should do nothing without his permission.
Good. Any other points? Anything else?
People in all the ashram should be guided by the spiritual master.
So Prabhupada is emphasizing that one of the main purposes of Varnashram Dharma is that we give up attachment to sex life. Srila Prabhupada, when he first came to America in 1965-66, then he instructed his disciples that sex life is only meant to be engaged in one ashram, which is the Grihastha ashram. And in the Grihastha ashram, one can only engage in sex life once a month to procreate children. So when he was teaching his first disciples this point, then Hayagriva Prabhu, then he said, then we might as well just give it up altogether. If it's only there once a month just to have children, you might as well just give it up altogether. Prabhupada said, yes, this is the point. So the point of Grihastha Ashram, the point of Varnashram Dharma, one of the points is that we should give up sex life. Because it is not permitted in three of the ashrams. Sannyas, brahmacharis, vanaprasas, it's not permitted. There is a license for it once a month in the Grihastha Ashram to beget the children. So in the Vedic culture, in the Varnashram culture, then one is reducing one's attachment to sex life, which is the active principle or the main cause of bondage in this material world. So in order to give up our attachment to the material body, because sex life is what is causing us to be attached to the material body, grossly and subtly, then if we follow Varnashram strictly, then gradually we will give up that attachment. And then we can gain liberation. Then we can actually render service to Krishna in our swarup. So one has to follow it very carefully, very strictly, and very gradually. And we see in Kali Yuga, practically, most of the devotees need to go through the Grihastha Ashram. So they can have a license for sex life, but in a regulated way, and gradually get it out of your system. Because if you follow nature's law and you go through a Grihastha ashram, the natural consequence of sex life is children. And children should make you give up all your attachment to this material world. That's the point of having children. And then you should lose your attachment to the material world. You have a few kids and then go through a Grihastha ashram. After 20 years, 25 years, you should be more or less renounced. You should be feeling, now I really want to serve Krishna. That was so difficult. Little bit of pleasure and then so much work involved, so much hardship involved, so much austerity involved, just for a little pleasure. So that is the point. So Grihastha Ashram is purifying. It is meant to make us detach from this material world. That's the point of Varnashram Dharma. Now, one only makes advancement in spiritual life when one follows the order of the spiritual master. So it is applicable to all of the varnas and all of the ashramas that one must follow the spiritual master. And if one follows the instructions of the spiritual master, then one will become successful in whatever situation one is in the material world. Whether you're a brahmachari, a grihastha, a vanaprastha or a sannyasi, the devotee is fully dedicated to following the instruction of the spiritual master. And that is what liberates us from this material world. So a real disciple then he considers himself to be a follower of the spiritual master. As Lord Chaitanya has taught us, Gopibhatu Pada Kamalayor Dasa Dasa Anudasa. So Lord Chaitanya said, I'm not a sannyasi, I'm not a vanaprastha, I'm not a grihastha, I'm not a brahmachari, right? And I'm not a sudra, a vaishya, a chatra or a brahmana, like that. So this is not the point of the Krishna consciousness movement. This is not the purpose. The purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement is not to absorb ourselves as a particular in the identity of a particular vana or a particular ashrama. Externally, we have to identify with them to a certain degree so that we can gradually lose our attachment to the material body. In other words, you have to understand I am a grihastha. Not that I am a grihastha, but I'm situated in my conditioned nature in the grihastha ashram, and I follow that strictly and properly so that gradually I can release myself from that identification. You don't want to always identify as being a grihastha. And similarly, you don't want to think I am a brahmana or I am a vaishya or I am a chatra or a sudra. You want to give up that, you want to transcend that attachment. So we only follow these principles of vana and ashram strictly in this material world so that we can release ourselves from these attachments. That is the point of vana and ashram, to gradually release us from the bodily identification of life. It is a secondary principle. That's what the seventh canto is teaching us. The essential principle of the seventh canto is the first 10 chapters, Shuddha Bhakti, or pure devotion to Krishna, as Prahlad Maharaj is showing us. Right? Our actual occupational duty is Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Padasevanam. This is our actual occupation. But because we can't do that all the time, or exclusively, or perfectly at this point in time, then we have to perform Grihastha Dharma. We have to get married, have children, work, do all these things, and do Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishusmaranam alongside that, right, in order to purify our consciousness. But we can't just let go of the material energy immediately because we're not qualified. We'll fall back. So therefore, we have to go through it gradually. Not that. So we follow Varnashram Dharma to gradually purify our consciousness, but it's not the goal. Lord Chaitanya said the goal is to be a servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. So we do that by following the spiritual master's order. That is the actual essential principle, or the guiding principle in the devotee's life, is the order of the spiritual master. Prabhupada says the order of the guru is the pride of the disciple. We become attached to the order of the spiritual master. And his order is what delivers us from the material energy. Right? So he gives us orders according to our vana and our ashram, but he also gives us orders on the spiritual platform, according to the process of devotional service, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, like that. So he will give you both instructions in order to purify you. He'll say to certain disciple, you get married. Other disciple will say, you stay renounced, right? In order to purify that devotee. And then he will give transcendental instructions simultaneously. But it is the transcendental process of bhakti which relieves us from this material world. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the Varnashram system is like a safety net. Just like if you're walking on the tightrope, if you fall, you need a net to catch you. So while we're practicing devotional service, sometimes we identify with the body, and then we fall down to the bodily platform of life. That's what Varna and Ashram is there. We may be acting on the bodily platform of life, but still, you have to follow rules and regulations. You can't just enjoy the body in an unregulated way. You have to follow it according to Varna and Ashram. And that purifies our consciousness. And that picks us up and keeps us protected so we don't go down too far. And then we progress in devotional life. So that is why one has to be strict. That's why it says that you have to give up sex life. Right? Even if you're a grihastha, actually you're a brahmachari, even if you're in the grihastha ashram. Right? Sex life is only for children once a month. Like that. And then once you've had a few kids, then that's it, it's all finished. Then it's just absorbing yourself in devotional service. So it is just a temporary situation that we put ourselves in order to gradually purify ourselves, to fulfill our material desires while we're still practicing devotional service. But it is not the goal. The goal is the order of the spiritual master, to become a pure servant of Krishna. So, any points so far? Yes, sir.
We notice in the world outside there is more and more an increase in the support of same gender marriage, same gender relationship. And it's a matter of time before we see those people who want to take spiritual life, especially in the Krishna consciousness. So how will we adapt to those kind of needs, or how do we answer people who might have those questions in our future? Because
how will ISKCON accept same-sex marriage? Is that the essence of the question? That's the question, yeah. ISKCON's discussing it at this point in time. They're working it out. They're trying to work it out. It's divided the Catholic Church. It's a very difficult thing. Very difficult thing. So ISKCON's also addressing it, but because Shirishra Prabhu is pointing this out in his lectures on Prabhupada as the founder of Acharya. Not everything is going to suit all places simultaneously. In other words, ISKCON's an international society. Western society is very liberal now. You know, I mean, the Greens Party, because the election's in 2 or 3 weeks in Australia, the Greens Party are really pushing for same-sex marriage to become legal. That's one of their main points. In New Zealand, it just became legal. New Zealand became legal only very, very recently. I think England recently it became legal. It's already legal in Holland for a long time. Certain places in America, it's legal like that. So it's something that the whole world is addressing now. And it's something ISKCON is also addressing, because some people are conservative and saying, no, it's not Shastric, it's not there, like that. And other people are saying, well, everything's time, place and circumstance, things have adopted, personally. I personally don't have a problem with it at all. You and I both know devotees who are gay. Maybe you don't know, but I can tell you after the class, who are very good devotees. And I know they're gay. I mean, I know many, not many, but several gay couples in ISKCON who are in a relationship, not married legally, because it's not legal in this country, not accepted as married couples in terms of their relationship with ISKCON, but they are gay, they are in a committed relationship, and they are initiated devotees, and they're very, very good devotees, and they're personal friends of mine. And I don't have a problem with ISKCON recognizing that or with the government recognizing that. Because I think in terms of Kali Yuga, the way Kali Yuga is just going to become more and more prevalent. So then what do we do? Just cut out, you know, a massive portion of society. And what do? And we just say, no, you're just all, you know, you just have to rectify yourselves or something like that. Like, personally, I don't think that is the way to go. Bhakti Tirtha Swami, who is my Shiksha Guru, he didn't see it like that. He did not see that was a problem. Hridayananda Maharaj is very supportive of gay marriage. My Guru Maharaj said before he left the planet that it's something we have to address very seriously in ISKCON. So I think it'll just be a matter of time until these things are somehow worked out or like that. I personally don't have a problem with it like that. But there are devotees who do have a problem with it. So it's just something which will... And like I said, with the Catholic Church, it's practically divided the Church. Because many of them say it's no problem, and others say, no, it is a big problem. So, I don't know if they gave any...
If it's going to accept that, then you mean that we have to perform the marriage activity like we get married, right? Yeah?
What is that?
Like we get married. People come and get married.
Jagya.
Yeah, so we have to do that for them, you think so?
That's the question. At this point in time, we don't do that. But the question...
Can't do it.
That's the point. You're saying can't, and then many people, including some of our gurus in ISKCON, are saying you can. That's no different.
That's not, again, one asking them, because they're not going to have children.
So that's what many people in ISKCON are saying. What exactly what you're saying. Many people have that point of view. I respect that. I respect your point of view. I fully understand your point of view. But there are many devotees in ISKCON, even GBC and gurus, who say, no, it is okay.
They can go and visit Garden as a visitor, they still can be devoted. They still can be devoted, but they can't get the blessing.
I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. I understand it and I respect that. I respect your opinion, and many devotees in ISKCON have this opinion. My personal opinion is the other way, personally. I think it is okay like that. And I think probably as the next couple of centuries go by, or even the next couple of decades, these things will be accepted by ISKCON and also by the Catholic Church and many of the world organisations like that. They may or may not, I don't know. Like that, but anyway, we'll see. I don't think at this point, anyway, we'll have to see, because it's a big problem for these people, and that's why it's being like New Zealand has just passed it. Countries are passing it at this point in time. There's a lot of discussion about this. Religions are having huge debates about this, so it's something which is, it's not going to go away, and it's only going to increase. And like, I know these particular gay devotees. They're gay and they have a committed relationship and they're initiated and they're chanting 16 rounds. They're better devotees than I am. So to see, the quality of the person and not to recognise that, I understand traditionally it's not there, but the way Kali Yuga is now, it's only going to increase. It's not going to become less. So I think at some point in time we have to address it, and that's what some of our leaders are saying. Like that. Friedananda Maharaj was very...
You have to find out a way how to get them married. You have to find a way how to get them, because basic system, there's no mantra. So, what sort of mantra do you need to get to marry them? Okay, they'll get married, but you can't have a child, because you will not. There's no such thing, you can't have children.
Yeah,
so then there's no sense to send you over. So there's no mantra. So, mantra...
Yeah, so maybe Maha Mantra rectifies everything. I don't know. Anyway, I'm not on the GBC, so I don't have to worry about it. I'll wait for them to work it out. But I'm pretty certain in the next couple of hundred years, or even the next couple of decades, it will become accepted. I'm pretty certain it will.
Yeah, but then different way of getting them married.
I don't want to keep talking about it. I do. I respect your opinion. I do. I respect it. It's not like I feel your opinion's wrong. There's just two ways of looking at it. I see the validity in that way, and I see the validity in that way. And personally, I'm looking that way because some of my Shiksha gurus, even my Diksha guru, saw that, in order for us to progress in Kali Yuga, these things may have to be accepted. Like, okay, Brahmacharini Ashram, it's not there. It's not Vedic, right? 1966, Prabhupada starts ISKCON. One of the first things he did, Brahmacharini Ashram. That's radical, right? In the Gaudiya Math, in that tradition, there's no such thing as a Brahmacharini ashram, right? And Prabhupada goes against, and Prabhupada was heavily criticized by his godbrothers for some of the things that he did, including that. So there are adjustments to the tradition, already historically within ISKCON. There are adjustments to the tradition.
That was very good. System Prabhupada made, that's very good, because give a chance to move on to progress.
Yeah, but the women in the Vedas, they're not allowed on the altar. The women are not allowed to go on and dress the deities. You'll see in the next couple of days on Janmashtami, most of the pujaris are Matajis.
Yeah.
But if you go strictly Vedic, that's not there. They should not even be on the altar. They're all contaminated and fallen, and less intelligent and second class. But they're better pujaris than the men. They dress the deities better than the men. I can't dress the deities as well as the Matajis can. So what's better? I go on the altar and I do it because I'm in a male body. Or you get someone who's more qualified.
Yes. I think the last chapter, one of the concluding paragraphs was that we shouldn't be tied down by principles, and principles, but the aim should be to accept and share the Mahapastra as much as possible. That's the only thing we find.
Yeah. Like I said, I've stated my position.
That's right.
But, and I understand others' positions in ISKCON, so I'm not saying one's right or one's wrong, because I think there's validity in both. And I, amongst our leaders in ISKCON, there is differing in opinions and what to do. It's like that. So I'm not going to make a conclusive statement, because there is not a conclusive statement. It's not my position to make a conclusive statement. But I'm just trying to broaden everyone's way they think. Even if you don't agree with it, at least maybe just more broadly look at things. That's all. And then we'll see what happens. Like I said, it's not my decision anyway, so... But I think it will happen in the next couple of hundred years, if not sooner. In the next couple of decades it may happen. Because it's happening all over the world. Australia will do it. You watch. They will do it. The next 10 or 20 years or 30 years or so, Australia will do it. There will be gay marriage in Australia legally. New Zealand just did it, you know, in the last couple of months. It'll be all over the world within, you know, 100 or 200 years. The whole world will just be an accepted thing. But for me, it's looking at the quality of the devotee. Because I know devotees who are, you know, homosexual, but they're better devotees than I am. I don't look at it in terms... They chant 16 rounds every day. They follow the four regular principles. They're initiated by gurus. They do devotional service. And I think they're better devotees than I am. So how am I going to judge them in saying, you're not a qualified recipient of Lord Chaitanya's mercy? How can I say that? Because they're better devotees than I am. So how can I say that? Like that. So how can we judge and say you cannot be a part of Lord Chaitanya's movement? We can't say that. I don't think we can. Especially just the way Kali Yuga is becoming. So. They are brahmachari. I'm a brahmachari. I'm a brahmachari. According to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, we're brahmachari grihasthas. So they're also brahmacharis. Just because you're married doesn't mean that you're also a brahmachari. That's Prabhupada's already said that in the sections. And we won't talk about it any further because it's inconclusive. Interesting discussion. Now we'll hear from Purnamasi. That's the point. There's no compromise on that. There's no compromise.
But you should not say this.
Why?
That they follow the four regulated principles.
But they do.
They don't follow exactly what Srila Prabhupada said about sex.
No, they do, because you're not allowed to have illicit sex. So it's the same thing.
What's the meaning of homosexual?
But if you're not engaging in sex, then there's no... You're not breaking the principles. So. Okay, we'll go to the next verse. It's an interesting discussion. Thank you, Manoj Prabhu, for bringing it up. But we're not going to come to a conclusion tonight like that. So. But it is it's something, it's very good actually that you brought, because it is topical, especially in light of the modern social and political environment. It's very topical, so we should address these things. We shouldn't just ignore these things. We should address them like that. But we're not going to come to a conclusion. I have my opinions, but anyway. It'll take time for these things to focus. We will see in the next, you know, the world's changing so quickly at the moment. It's changing so quickly at the moment. And even the religions will change.
This is a question from the
Yeah. They will judge us on this. That's the point. If you go, if you start having a hard line, and say no, then they cannot be accepted. We're going to lose in the next, you know, 50 or 100 years. We're going to lose so many people who can be good devotees. You know, so anyway, we have to look at this. So. Okay. Brahmacharis or grihasthas who have taken the vow of celibacy, as described above, should not indulge in the following: applying powder or ointment to the eyes, massaging the head with oil, massaging the body with the hands, seeing a woman or painting a woman's picture, eating meat, drinking wine, decorating the body with flower garlands, smearing scented ointment on the body, or decorating the body with ornaments. These should be given up. So obviously these things need to be avoided. Why must they be avoided? Because they put one in the bodily concept of life. So therefore, for all members of the Varna and Ashram society, they have to give up these activities. This is for everyone. In other words, it means you should be more simple. You should be less bodily conscious. That's, if you really look at the world these days, what is the problem? Everyone is so bodily conscious. Right? Everything is about the body. Right? All the TV shows are about the body. Right? All of the media, it's about the body. Right? All the advertising is just about the body. Right? Society is very superficial these days. That's another point, just to get back to the previous point. If someone's interested in spiritual life, that's rare in Kali Yuga. You know, if someone's really sincerely interested in spiritual life, that is rare in Kali Yuga. You look at society, they're just completely materialistic these days. And so much absorbed in the bodily conscious. And then we say, okay, you're interested in spiritual life, but we can't accept you because of your particular proclivity, then I don't see that as being very compassionate, personally. I think so.
You can't massage your body with your hand when you're having a shower, or massaging your body. Your body with a hand.
Do you do this?
No, when you have a shower and stuff.
You do it when you have a shower?
Yeah, no, just you put some oil on your body because it's cracking up.
You should immediately give this up.
Just to cool the body, bro. Everybody in India just to cool the body once a week. They take
the master does.
Everybody.
This is terrible. Bhagavatam is saying, don't touch the hair with the body with the oil. You say one thing, but then you do the other thing. See? Like that. No, it means we should not be so much in the bodily concept of life. It means that, you know, people these days, they buy perfumes and they, you know, it's all because it's all based on sex life.
But you can use it to looking after your body.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you don't have to do too much like to, we don't do that.
Yeah.
You hardly take care of your body.
Yeah.
So sometimes sick and cracking up, you can put it to the body.
What it means is that for bodily maintenance, it's permissible. For bodily maintenance, it's permissible, but not for sense gratification.
Not for
because if you're just doing it because, you know, I want to smell nice, I want to look good, or that's not the point. But to maintain the body, you should do these things.
That's all.
Yeah.
But we don't use anything. We don't have any
perfume now. Are we all happy now? Yes. TK. According to the rules and regulations mentioned above, one who is twice born, namely a Brahmana, Kshatriya or Vaishya, should reside in the Gurukul under the care of the spiritual master. There he should study and learn all the Vedic literatures along with their supplements and the Upanishads, according to his ability and power to understand. If possible, the student or disciple should reward the spiritual master with the remuneration the spiritual master requests. And then, following the master's order, the disciple should leave and accept one of the other ashrams, namely the Grihastha ashram, Vanaprastha ashram, or Sannyas ashram, as he desires. Jamuna Lila, can you read the first paragraph?
To study the Vedas and understand them, of course, requires some special intelligence. For the members of the three higher sections of society, namely the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, must learn the Vedic literature according to their capability and power to understand. In other words, studying the Vedic literature is compulsory for everyone but the Shudras and Antyajas. The Vedic literature gives the knowledge that can lead one to understand the absolute truth, Brahman, Paramatma or Bhagavan. Gurukula or the reformatory educational institution should be used only to understand Vedic knowledge. At the present time, there are many educational institutions for training and technology, but such knowledge has nothing to do with understanding of the absolute truth. Technology, therefore, is meant for the Shudras, whereas the Vedas are meant for the Bijas. Consequently, this verse states, Bijo Vidya Vidya Chatrayin Sangopani Shadam. At the present time, in the age of Kali, practically everyone is a Shudra and no one is Bija. Therefore, the condition of society has very much deteriorated.
So, any points?
The expression teaching only about the absolute truth.
Hmm.
But in the modern day, universities have got no problem with it.
Except Melbourne University Bhakti Yoga Club. Otherwise, pretty much not much, unfortunately. So, any other points?
Everyone
is a Shudra. Kalo Sudra Sambhav. What does that mean? Actually, according to the previous chapter, the sutras are actually quite qualified, according to the Vedic. So actually, in Kali Yuga, most people are less than Sudra. Because Sudras are still following some principles. But these days, people don't even follow principles. So they're actually Vana Sankara. Vana Sankara means a population which doesn't have any spiritual focus. And if you see society these days, people really don't have a spiritual focus. They're not so interested in spiritual life, by and large. Okay. So, any other points?
Since nobody is a dvija, dvija means twice born, so nobody is an initiated brahmana or a realized brahmana. That's what it says, dvija. So nobody is dvija, everybody is shudra.
So according to this instruction in the Bhagavatam, everyone in every vana and every ashram should study the Vedas. It means that in order to progress in spiritual life, you need to study. And that's why Prabhupada put so much emphasis on distributing his books. Distribute books, distribute books, distribute books, because people need to have spiritual education to enlighten themselves. So this is the one of the main instructions of ISKCON, one of the main purposes of ISKCON. If you read Prabhupada's seven purposes of ISKCON, they very much center around the study, systematic study of Vedic literature. And the distribution of Vedic literature. But what is the final purpose of ISKCON? Purpose number seven. First six are there, and then what is the seventh? No.
This is the view of achieving the above to publish literature.
Yeah. Yeah, with the view to achieving the aforementioned principles to distribute periodicals, books, like that. So that was Prabhupada's mission. In other words, to disseminate knowledge. And we're fortunate that we have Navina Nirada Prabhu here at the moment. He is, in my time, when I was a book distributor back in the 90s in ISKCON, he was one of the top two book distributors in the world. You know, he's sometimes, on days in marathon, sometimes he'd distribute 900 books on the street in one day. Like that. In the marathons, they were distributing 400 or 500 hardback books a day on the street. Him and Hari Namananda. They were the top two, and they were always competing with each other. And they would be travelling around Germany and Switzerland. And then they'd ring each other up every night, and Hari Nam would say to Navina, he would say, "How many books did you distribute today?" And Navina would say, 600. And Hari Nam would say, "I distributed 700. When actually he distributed 500, you tell him. And the next day they'd get more, like that. They're always competing. And then Hari Namananda set the record, 969 books, one day, on the street. That was the top, never been broken, that record, in a little town in Switzerland, out in the Swiss Alps. And he distributed that. So they were distributing that movie. Even now, if you go out with Navina on the street, you'll see, in 3 or 4 hours, he'll distribute, you know, close to 100 books on the street. So Prabhupada was emphasizing that we distribute books to give knowledge to modern society, because modern society is devoid of spiritual focus. So we have to change that. We have to somehow rack our brains to make them interested in spiritual life. And as it says here, everyone should study spiritual knowledge. We have to find newer and newer ways to get people interested in understanding spiritual topics, because that is the vacuum in society at this point in time. That is what is missing in human society. People are just not spiritually interested at this point in time. So then, Srila Prabhupada says that these days, people are not so inclined to study. So we have to think of other ways like that. People don't read books so much now. They read everything on the internet. So we have to be on the internet. You shouldn't even bring these tablet electronic things to the class, you know. But you see, these days, people are just doing that. They're always on the internet. People don't read the books so much these days. So we have to think of ways to get on the internet and continuously be a step ahead. Whatever they do, then we have to do it in a Krishna conscious way. And you see, that's the way Prabhupada was, right? You see, Prabhupada, we have a dictaphone here. There's no dictaphone, but I thought there used to be a dictaphone here. You see, Prabhupada in that particular posture, this particular murti, if you go to Vrindavan in certain places, certain times of the day, he's holding the dictaphone. So when Prabhupada was using that dictaphone, late 60s, dictaphones were like the latest technology. You know, it's like the equivalent these days of a, what's the latest, iPhone or something? Is iPhone like the latest thing?
It's old.
It's old. What's like the newest?
Tablet.
Okay, so tablet's like the newest thing. So back then, Prabhupada was like that. Whenever something was new or the latest thing, then Prabhupada would use that in Krishna's service. So we have to think of ways now. If everyone's not reading books anymore, if they're on the internet, then get on the internet. Right? And always be a step ahead of them. Whatever they're doing, then do it in a Krishna-conscious way and make them attracted to Krishna. Somehow or other, we have to give them spiritual knowledge. Otherwise, they're just completely in the bodily concept of life. Just like today, I had to go and visit my grandfather. He's 87. He's in hospital. My grandmother rang me on the weekend, said he's gone to hospital, so I had to go and see him. So I listened to the radio a little bit on the way in the car. And what's the main? What are the main things they're talking about on the radio at the moment?
Election.
Yeah, the election. Right? Do you hear anything spiritual? They're interviewing Tony Abbott on nothing spiritual. You know. And then the other big news is the 2-day discussion going on between the Essendon Football Club and the AFL. So, you know, completely in the bodily concept of life. You know, so we have to somehow get on the radio, get on the television, get on the internet, whatever they're doing, but put Krishna on there, and somehow give spiritual knowledge to society. Any points? Which one?
Vedic literature is compulsory for everyone, but the sutras and antejas.
In the purport. Antajas. Antiajas. What's the Sanskrit for antiajas? Is it in the Sanskrit? I think it means those outside of the Vedic system. I think it's from the previous chapter. Those who means chandalas and malechas, yavanas. Like that. So, you got a point?
When I went through my school, it was looking at some of the very traffic. We found that there were hundreds and hundreds of people searching for Hare Krishna on the internet and Google. And that was one of the reasons why we launched the website Hare Krishna, because that's what people were searching. So they see people on the streets, or they met somebody at Gopal's across the. And in the one time they go and type, what is Hare Krishna? From honey, there's a lot of people searching, wanting to know about this more.
Yeah, Hare Krishna Valley website gets about 600 hits a month, which is not much, but something. At least we have a web presence, something there. So. Okay, read the second paragraph. Would have a bundle published? Can you read the second?
Another point to be observed from this world is that from the Brahmachari Ashrama one may accept Sannyasa Ashrama, Vanaprastha Ashrama or Grahastha Ashrama. It is not compulsory for a Brahmachari to become a Grahastha. Because the ultimate aim is to understand the absolute truth. there's no necessity of going through all the different ashramas. Thus, one may proceed to the sannyasa ashrama directly from the brahmachari ashrama. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur accepted the sannyasa ashrama directly from the brahmachari ashrama. In other words, His Divine Grace Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did not think it compulsory to accept the grahastha ashrama or vanaprastha ashrama.
So, what are the points?
It's not compulsory to go through one kasta. One can directly from brahmacharya to sannyasa.
Just like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, straight from brahmacharya to sannyas. Okay, so any other points? Yeah, Jabhataka is fine.
Yeah, I think somebody was telling him to get married, but he tried to avoid them instead of Prabhupada gave him that one.
Any other points?
One has the control and it's better not to go through the ashram. But Anacharya ashram is very conducive to perfecting the life, so it's not much of that meaning.
Yeah, the point that's being made is that if we can avoid Grihastha Ashram, then avoid it. Give it a miss, if you can. But for most of us, we can't. So therefore, we have to go through it to release our material desires. But if you can, stay brahmachari. Be happy. That is the life of a brahmachari, like that. I lived for brahmachari for 8 years. I had everything. Everything was there for me. Completely happy. But still, because we still have material desires, we have to go through the grihastha ashram to purify ourselves. And my washing got done every day. Jagannath Balabha Prabhu did my washing every day. I never did my washing once for 8 years. Right? All my meals provided by the temple. Right? Somewhere to stay. Everything I needed for 8 years. No anxiety whatsoever. But still, because material desires are there, you have to go through the Grihastha Ashram to get purified. Like that. But Brahmachari Ashram is the best, by far. If you can do it, then just stay Brahmachari. There's no one in this room we have to worry about. Okay. Maybe a ditcher. Be Brahmachari your whole life. Fully surrendered to Krishna. And then one day become Aditya Maharaj. Aditya Maharaj. Very difficult to do, I'm telling you. Not impossible, but difficult to do. Okay. One should realize that in the fire, in the spiritual master, in one's self, and in all living entities, in all circumstances and conditions, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, has simultaneously entered and not entered. He is situated externally and internally as the full controller of everything. By practicing in this way, whether one be in the Brahmachari ashram, Grihastha ashram, Vanaprastha ashram, or Sannyasa ashram, one must always realize the all-pervading presence of the Supreme Lord, for in this way it is possible to understand the absolute truth. Sharadarata?
This is the beginning of self-realization. One must first understand how Brahm is present everywhere and how he is acting. This education is called Brahm Jigyasa and is the real concern of human life. Without such knowledge, one cannot claim to be human being. Rather, he remains in the animal kingdom. As it is said, sa eva go khara. Without such knowledge, one is no better than a cow or an ass.
So the point of Vanashrama is that we should come to the spiritual platform. We should become Jivan Mukta. Jivan Mukta means we understand that we are a spirit soul. Krishnara Nityadas, Krishna's eternal servant. So to go through Varnashram Dharma, yeah, that is the goal of Varnashram Dharma. Not to become a perfect brahmacharya or a perfect grihastha or a perfect sannyasi, but to transcend all of our attachments to this world. Right. And if we come to that platform, then we are perfect. Pandit Samadarshana. We just see the living entity. You see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, right, as the supreme spiritual entity, and all living entities as his spiritual servants. That is perfect consciousness. So that is the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that we see all living entities as spiritual part and parcels of Krishna. Even the dog, who was in the party of Shivananda Sen, the devotees walked from Mayapur to Jagannath Puri for 1 month, and one dog was coming with them, and every day the devotees were feeding the dog. And then they got to Jagannath Puri, and the day before they got to Puri, the dog had disappeared. Everyone was concerned, but when they got to Puri, they saw that the dog was sitting close to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was eating coconut, and he was throwing it to the dog, and the dog was catching and eating the coconut eaten by Mahaprabhu. The next day they didn't see the dog, and the dog had gone back to the spiritual world by eating the remnants of Lord Chaitanya. So this is how a devotee sees. He sees all living entities as being parts of Krishna's, part and parcel of Krishna, as a devotee of Krishna. Just like at our farm, we have two dogs, and it's very apparent to us that they're not, they're devotees from previous life. Maybe some offence was committed or something, but especially Malika, she's very human-like in her nature, very human-like. It's almost like she understands what we're talking about. Quite often we're having conversations, we look over to her, and it's almost like she understands what's going on. Bhima is also very evolved in consciousness, but he's very interested in what he eats. Pretty much all he thinks about. Every time he sees you, he's just like looking, what do you have? We have lunch, and then he's just waiting, what's left? Like that, so. Because it's his body, he can't transcend the conditioning of that body. So he's just a walking tongue. But you can see by his consciousness, he's not an ordinary dog. And he's obviously a devotee. He has a pure nature. I've seen both of them. Remarkable consciousness, both of them. They're obviously devotees. So when we're advanced, we'll see all living entities like that. We'll see every living entity is actually a devotee of Krishna, is part and parcel of Krishna. That is the point of Varnashram Dharma. Comes to that point. Okay, now we will hear, we're going to finish the chapter, so we'll read through the verses, but we will hear about the Varnaprastha Ashram. So is anyone thinking of becoming a Varnaprastha? Okay. So for the three of you who are thinking of becoming Varnaprasthas, this is the instructions which you need to follow. O King, I shall now describe the qualification of a Varnaprastha, one who has retired from family life. By rigidly following the rules and regulations for the Varnaprastha, one can easily be elevated to the upper planetary system known as Mahaloka. Now, what is a Varnaprastha? We don't have an established Varnaprastha ashram in ISKCON, right? Because ISKCON devotees are only now getting to the age where the ashram is necessary. Because up until now, ISKCON's only 40 years old. Most devotees will join in their 20s. So you see, the older devotees in our movement these days are only really in their 60s. Some are in their 70s, like that. So basically, we're seeing the Varnaprastha ashram develop. Now, what is the Varnaprastha ashram? It means that when the husband and wife no longer interested in grihastha life, because that's past, they become more renounced. The children are generally married, so they don't have responsibility, and they simplify their life. Generally, they go to the Varna. Varna means forest. Generally, they'll go to a place like Vrindavan or Mayapur, a holy place, and the husband and wife, they'll associate less with each other, but they're still together. but they concentrate more on a spiritual life. So either they can go preach, just like you'll see Sankarshan Prabhu and Vishnu Priya Mataji. You'll see them. They're like vanaprastas, practically speaking. You see like Burujan Prabhu and Mother Jagatariti. They're like vanaprastas. Still married, but really they're very, very spiritually focused at this point in time. So that is what vanaprastha ashram means. It means a husband and wife are there, but very spiritually focused and giving up their material responsibilities, because those things have been achieved or taken care of, and then they just concentrate more on spiritual life. The next stage is sannyas, where the husband and wife actually give up each other's association. It would be interesting to see in ISKCON how much that takes place. You may not see so much that the devotees take sannyas. Quite often you see the husband and wives all stay together, but they'll just keep preaching like that. I don't think so many will take sannyas. Maybe some will, but we'll see in due course of time.
In ISKCON right now, that is also a challenge, Prabhuji. Like, we don't see devotees lasting for so many years. There are very few devotees who go through that life cycle, and still there would be a handful in our community who stay through the whole life cycle. Let's say they started in their young age and they are still devotees for a long time. Especially, like, I was told in this temple, there are so many devotees who are coming before, and especially the Australian devotees, and they are not there right now.
But you'll see it more now, because this comes a little different to what it was. The reason we didn't see so many senior devotees active now is because they weren't engaged so much in hearing and chanting. It was very much about just pushing the movement on. But their sadhana was not really strong, whereas you see now the devotees are more balanced. So I think we'll see from now on more devotees go through and actually stay committed all the way to. But you see a lot of those older devotees, you don't see them around Melbourne. Most of the older devotees live around Mwoolumba. If you go up there, you'll see a lot of them. And a lot of them are coming back and becoming more serious in their older age now. A lot of them are cooking at the restaurants and doing deity worship. If you go to Mwoolumba, to the farm, the pujaris who worship the deities, the main pujaris who dress, they need about six devotees in the morning because they have three altars. So they need about six pujaris, and they added up the age of the six main pujaris, and I think when they added up the age, it was something like 500 and something years between all of them, because they're all like late 60s to 70s. So there are devotees who are doing that, like that. We don't see it so much around Melbourne because there's not so many senior devotees around Melbourne, but you'll see it more as this one becomes more stable. Like all of us, we're planning to, as we get older, just keep going. You see, like Charitavarta and Mahatma, they're 70 now, still doing this. Very serious. She is our grandmother. She is our example in Krishna consciousness.
Really?
Yeah. If I can still be practicing like you when I'm 70, I'll be very happy. So.
Yeah, that's encouraging.
Yeah, you're an inspiration to us. You and your husband always come. That's a great inspiration. Yeah, but see if I'm still doing it when I'm 70. So, okay, now I can say, yes, I'm doing it all. But see if I'm still doing it in 30 years' time. So. I hope so. By your mercy.
Yes.
Okay. A person in vanaprastha life should not eat grains grown by tilling of the fields. He should also not eat grains that have grown without tilling of the fields, but are not fully ripe. Nor should a vanaprastha eat grains cooked in fire. Indeed, he should eat only ripened fruits by the sunshine. So all of you vanaprasthas? Yeah. Fruitary. Tilling the fields means ploughing. Ploughing the fields.
So how many grains don't eat? Or is it saying that don't eat grains for vanaprastha?
Yeah, same for the vanaprasthas. In the Vedic context, they should live in the forest, because you don't get grains in the forest. Grains means agriculture. You have to go to the field But the vanaprastha lives in the forest, so he just has to eat the fruits which are growing in the forest. The fruits and the roots, that's what the vanaprastha eats. So it's very austere. We won't find that now.
There's no forest these days. All the forest gone.
Yeah, forest is gone. They don't plant the right trees anymore. Yeah, because they don't plant. It's so stupid. Like, if you look across the road, straight across the road from the temple, there's an olive tree. Straight across the road. And if you go around this whole area, there's olive trees all over the place, right? Because the Greeks, they were the ones who lived here 30, 40 years ago, and they still live here. They planted all the olive trees. And if you look over every fence, there's lemon tree growing over every fence. And if you look in all the backyards, there's fruit trees. And if you go straight across the road to Pete, he's the old Greek man, lives straight across, very nice man. You go straight, go in his backyard he has tomatoes and eggplant and zucchini, and go there and some of them, he has so many things growing. So this is what the government should be doing. Right? But the government these days, you know, when all those olive trees die, they'll pull them out and they'll plant some useless tree, which doesn't have any fruit, no benefit.
Because they don't want to grow any vegetable trees here, because they can't sell farm produce that. They don't want any farmers anymore.
Yeah, that's the system.
They can't pick the farmers.
Can't pick the meats.
There should be some law like that.
No, all the Greeks come out and pick them. Yeah. They don't care. Some old Greek man, they'll just go and pick them. And the council come along and say, don't pick them. And he'll just say, I planted the tree. So. But the system is there. The government should be planting useful trees, but they don't do it anymore. But in the Vedic culture, just everywhere there was fruit. Just everywhere. So, you know, if anyone was hungry, there'd be fruit growing all over the place. But these days, it's not like that. So. Okay. Being very thoughtful, avanaprastha. Did I read the one before? Which one are we up to?
19.
Avanaprastha should prepare cakes to be offered in sacrifice from fruits and grains grown naturally in the forest. When he obtains new grains, he should give up his old stock of grains. Avanaprastha should prepare a thatched cottage or take shelter of a cave in a mountain, only to keep the sacred fire. But he should personally practice enduring snowfall, wind, fire, rain, and shining of the sun. The vanaprastha should wear matted locks of hair on his head, and let his body, hair, nails, and moustache grow. He should not cleanse the body. He should not cleanse his body of dirt. He should keep a water pot, deer skin, and rod, wear the bark of a tree as a covering, and use garments coloured like fire. Being very thoughtful, a vanaprastha should remain in the forest for 12 years, 8 years, 4 years, 2 years, or at least 1 year. He should behave in such a way that he will not be disturbed or troubled by too much austerity. When, because of disease or old age, one is unable to perform his prescribed duties for advancement in spiritual consciousness or study of the Vedas, he should practice fasting, not taking any food. He should properly place the fire element in his own self and in this way give up his bodily affinity, by which one thinks the body to be oneself or one's own. One should gradually merge the material body into the five elements, earth, water, fire, air, and sky. So what is the point? Because if you look at this, none of us can do this. Hands up if you could live like this. No, I couldn't live like this. Not possible. You know, just grow my hair like dreadlocks, right? Live in the forest, in a cave, only eat fruit. I can't do this. It's too austere. So what is the principle? The principle is for us, when we become vanaprasthas, we should live more simply. That's the point. Right, we should simplify our existence. When grihastha life is finished, when the kids are grown up and married, then the husband and wife should just become very simple and either preach or just practice Krishna consciousness and the holy dharma. Right, that's the point. Right, we can't do like high levels of austerity. This is like Vedic times. Not possible for us.
But what is the meaning of will not be disturbed by or controlled by Kim's austerity.
It means that if it's too austere, then he should be less austere, like that.
Like?
Well, it means if you're eating too less, then you should eat some more.
Okay.
Like that. I mean, for us, this is the whole thing's too austere.
What's that? Observing fasting.
We should do some fasting, as much as we can comfortably do.
If one person in India, if they are good creature, we won't let you live simply. There is so much food, they will be all around you, giving you things. If you don't want even the activity, suppose it's a problem. If I probably don't become one person, I probably will become one person, especially good creature. Watch. You go to it. If I start taking some people, they keep on, you know, what I can do for you, what I can do for you, all that. They keep coming. Because they want like material benefit from you, you give them blessings, you're like sadhu, you must have some siddhi. They think like that. And they will be all over you. So it's difficult to.
You just have to tell them. It's like Bhakti Tirtha Swami, when he was living here on the earth with us, then he only ate once a day. That was his system, only ate once a day. And then on a Kodashi he would completely fast. He'd do Nija. So sometimes, like, he would come and then he was doing preaching, like, at Urban Yoga. And then, you know, we'd cook prasad and we'd distribute prasad to everyone, but he only ate once a day at lunchtime. So then we'd say, Maharaj, we cook some prasad, would you like something to eat? And he would just very humbly say, I only eat once a day, so I can't take. So even if you're a vanaprasa and people are offering you things, but you can just say, you know, I only eat once a day or I already ate or something like that. So you don't, just because someone offers you something doesn't mean you have to eat it. Okay, we'll keep going. A sober, self-realized person who has full knowledge should merge the various parts of the body in their original sources. The holes in the body are caused by the sky. The process of breathing is caused by the air. The heat of the body is caused by fire. The semen, blood and mucus are caused by water. The hard substances like skin, muscle and bone are caused by earth. In this way, all the constituents of the body are caused by various elements and they should be merged again into those elements. Thereafter, the object of speech, along with the sense of speech, the tongue, should be bestowed upon fire. Craftsmanship and the two hands should be given to the demigod Indra. The power of movement and the legs should be given to Lord Vishnu. Sensual pleasure, along with the genitals, should be bestowed upon Prajapati. The rectum, with the power of evacuation, should be bestowed in its proper place unto Mrityu. The oral instrument, along with sound vibration, should be given to the deities presiding over the directions. The instrument of touch, along with the sense objects of touch, should be given to Vayu. Form with the power of sight should be bestowed upon the sun. The tongue, along with the demigod Varuna, should be bestowed upon water. And the power of smell, along with the two Ashwini Kumara demigods, should be bestowed upon the earth. The mind, along with all material desires, should be merged in the moon demigod. All the subject matters of intelligence, along with the intelligence itself, should be placed in Lord Brahma. False ego, which is under the influence of the material modes of nature, and which induces one to think, I am this body, and everything connected with the body is mine, should be merged along with the material activities in Rudra, the predominating deity of false ego. Material consciousness, along with the goal of thought, should be merged in the individual living being. And the demigods acting under the modes of material nature should be merged along with the perverted living being into the supreme being. The earth should be merged into water, water in the brightness of the sun, this brightness into the air into the sky into the false ego into the total material energy, the total material energy into the unmanifested ingredients, the pradhan feature of the material energy, and at last the ingredient feature of material manifestation into the supersoul. When all the material designations are thus merged into their respective material elements, the living beings who are all ultimately completely spiritual, being one in quality with the Supreme Being, should cease from material existence, as flames cease when the wood in which they are burning is consumed. When the material body is returned to its various material elements, only the spiritual being remains. The spiritual being is Brahman and is equal in quality to Para Brahman. So this is the purpose of the Bhagavatam. Now the Bhagavatam teaches us the difference between spirit and matter. And this is the very first verse of the Bhagavatam. It says the difference between reality and illusion. And you'll see if you go back to the first canto, when Yudhishthira and the Pandavas went to the Himalaya and they renounced this world, then Yudhishthira, this was his consciousness. He merged all of the material elements back into themselves, completely detached himself from the body, and just kept walking until he dropped. Right? Yudhishthira actually said he transcended. And he just merged himself fully on the spiritual platform. So Bhagavatam is teaching us to give up all our designations in this world and just to fully merge into the spiritual platform. That is the purpose of Vana Charan Dham. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.